Welcome to Superhero Authority Podcast on superheroauthority.com. I am one of your hosts, Dan, and I'm here with...
I guess I'm the other host, Jason.
What's up?
What's up?
Long time no podcast.
Yes, it has been a long time. This is episode 11, and part of the reason that we haven't done a podcast is I was actually at Comic-Con last week.
So it's been too damn hot.
That too. I mean, it's been a heat wave here in Cleveland the last month since our last podcast.
Everywhere, but yeah. But yeah, the Comic-Con thing, we just kind of figured take a break for a while, and then we'll get a bunch of good talking points.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we have a bunch of talking points.
You were there.
I was there. It was crazy.
We were following your tweets.
It was crazy. Well, yeah, I was tweeting off of my personal handle, my anonymous personal handle, just random funny stuff. And you see anything and everything you could possibly imagine at Comic-Con. It's, I mean, they said it was something crazy, like 140,000 people.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
3 days. Someone died. Was that true?
I don't know. I didn't even know someone died.
The Thursday before, last Thursday.
Okay.
Someone, a Twilight fan, supposedly died in line.
Wow.
I don't know. Just saw a quick thing on it.
Maybe that's a sign.
Maybe that's just, I don't know.
Okay, if I was in that situation and, like, that person was near me while we were waiting in line and that happened, I'd be like, all right, well... Granted, Twilight sucks anyway.
Well, I don't know what
I would have been like, all right, I'm done with this this franchise. It's killing people. I don't want it to kill me.
No. I don't know what day the Twilight panel was on, but they were in line for days before that. You know what I mean? Outside, maybe? I don't know.
There was people waiting hours and hours, probably days and days for that. I mean, the Iron Man 3 panel alone, it was like a 10-hour wait just to have a chance to get in, but it wasn't guaranteed.
Right.
And I mean, Hall H is huge. I mean, it holds like 10,000 people or something insane.
I saw a quick video on YouTube of Robert Downey making his way in to Hall H.
Nice.
And, like, through the crowd. He had, like, the repulsor hand
job.
Man. he made his way up the stage. And, there was a lot of people. You could tell there was just a sea of people looking at him and his hand job.
His hand job.
You know, the repulsor thing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't want to sit there for 10 hours and waste a whole day.
I'd rather roam around on the floor and look at the people in costumes.
That's what I did.
Talk to some creators if you can get, you know, near them. And
I didn't really talk to anyone, but I was so... Since I more or less did this myself because, you know, my girlfriend was working at G4
you guys were supposed to go together, but then she got...
She got, called in for a job. And so I really, you know... was doing it myself.
Yeah.
And I was so enamored with all the cosplayers and all the people dressed up that I had a blast for like two straight days just, you know, hanging out with them, getting pictures.
I don't care where you are. Standing in the line for anything just sucks. It's the worst.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's worse ways to spend your day, but just having to wait hours upon hours for something that's going to last, I don't know, 20 minutes, half hour maybe. Like, it just...
The panel's usually about an hour, but still.
I admit, I never go to any of that stuff, you know?
Well, I went to two panels, but even before I get into that, I actually had to stand in a line on preview night, which preview night was actually the day before, because it opened to the public, like, full-blown opened up on Thursday.
Yeah.
And Wednesday was preview night, and only, like, a certain amount of preview night tickets are sold.
Okay.
Still seemed like it was, like... 80,000 tickets because it's still crowded like any other day except for Saturday. Saturday was just berserker. But on preview night, I actually had to wait in a line that was a line to get into the actual preview night. For like 2 hours because I got there early. I was just like, oh, I'll just get there early and hang out and whatever. And then just this line formed and it's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
You seriously, I'm going to have to like stand here in a line just to wait to get in.
You just want to kind of do whatever, but then, like, as soon as the line starts, you're like, I have to be in that line, or else I'm going to miss out, and
the regular days, as soon as the doors open, just, you know, it was a mad rush when everyone was getting in, because people want exclusives, or to be the first to get in line for whatever panel, and
I'm familiar. I'm definitely familiar with that.
So I didn't there was still a line to get in, like, every single day. But I was just like, yeah, screw it. And I just kind of hung out and waited. And then once the doors open, the doors open.
Yeah.
And I just went in. And, I mean, I wanted to get a couple different of the toy exclusives. But, unfortunately, it was chaos.
Yeah.
And there was a point where...
What were they giving away? Anything cool?
Well, the exclusives, like, were just chaos for the fact that you had to actually get in a line... Or you had to get a pass to get in a line at a certain time to get to buy something in that line.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what Comic-Con is. And you know, most any convention is just a line. And, you know, you need to make sure you put yourself in the right line if you're going to go in a line the first time. Otherwise, you're wasting time in that line.
Yeah.
And I have to stop saying line. But that's the way it is.
That was the weekend, though.
That was the whole thing was lines and lines. But, no, I mean, I hung out with the... some of the biker scouts and the stormtroopers or the 501st for a little bit and got some fun pictures with them. Like I was getting arrested. I saw this is actually the most disturbing cosplay that I saw for the whole weekend. And I'm walking down one of the aisles, and granted there's, you know, this is like, you know, 500,000 square foot convention center, maybe even bigger. I mean, it takes like 20 minutes to walk from one end to the other with traffic.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
right.
That's a long walk. That's like a mile. You know what I mean?
You're trying to walk around people's boxes. And,
You know, strollers, little kids, trying not to step on them, and it's just insane. But
every 5 feet, there's someone getting their picture taken because they're in some silly costume. Oh, yeah. And yeah, it's just a mess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you just stop walking, and it's just like, what the heck? And then, like, I'm tall enough where I could look over and be like, oh, people are taking pictures. All right. Yeah. Maybe I'll go this way, and then I'll go some other way, and then next thing you know, same thing's happening. And it's just kind of a lose-lose, but you get to the point where you feel like you're like an NFL running back, and you're just juking and spinning and...
You gotta hit the hole.
...dishing out elbows, and you see the gap, and you shoot the gap.
Right, exactly.
But the craziest cosplay...
You could always grab somebody in a Yoda costume in front of you and use them as a lead blocker, and...
You know what I would always do? I would always find the larger, portlier people... that were the more aggressive walker, and I would just walk behind them.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they were just paving the way for me.
Right. Ride that wig.
But the most disturbing cosplay, I was walking around, and corner of my eye, I just see these legs. Oh, and I'm just like, all right, you know, and, you know, these legs were probably like 20 feet away.
Yeah.
So I'm getting closer, and then, you know, I can see the butt, and I'm just like, all right, this looks like it could probably be potentially... the hottest Harley Quinn.
Okay.
Because that's how this person was dressed. The hottest Harley Quinn cosplay at this convention. So, this person is just standing there, you know, taking pictures. I move from behind all the way to, like, the front to position myself to take a picture. And that's when I see it. I see the bulge. This was not a female Harley Quinn.
No.
Because there was a bulge, and instantly it felt like my eyeballs were bleeding internally.
You got suckered.
But at the same time, I was just like, this is so disturbing, I have to take a picture.
Yes.
So I took a picture anyways.
Yeah.
But it was shocking because...
Oh, 9 times out of 10, even the females dressed up shouldn't be dressed up like
that. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure San Diego is a little different because... There's more people in San Diego that have, like, a magazine-type physique, you know, as opposed to, like,
There's a good, healthy helping of the really good cosplayers, but there is still the equal share of the ones where you're just like, what? I mean, I saw Fat Spider-Man, which was awesome. I saw a fat dude that was dressed up in a Slave Leia outfit.
Yes.
And it was like, I have to take pictures of these because this is just too funny.
Yes, yes.
There's a lot of, like, hybrids, too. Like, there's a Stormtrooper Wolverine. And you know, people were kind of getting a little crazy, but some of the really fun ones are the, like, crossover gender costumes where, like, a girl's wearing, like, the sexy female Captain America version outfit.
Sure.
Those were always fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I wanted to do was get some exclusives, maybe resell them, you know, do the typical thing that a lot of people do when they go to these cons, they have exclusives. I wasn't able to really get too many, like, sweet exclusives. Actually, I really didn't get any. There was a lot of freebies, though, like a lot of posters. And, you know, people eat that stuff up because you can only get those posters if you're at the convention. Like a Marvel vs. Capcom Origins poster I got. Got a couple of the Iron Man 3 AIM shirts, which is pretty sweet.
That's cool.
One of them was a medium, and I didn't think it would fit, but it actually fits me. So I'm not, I'm keeping that for myself
because,
you know, I want people to be jealous. And
I am because I wanted one.
Well, they were handing out more mediums and smalls than they were larges and extra larges, which is completely opposite of when you go to anything like that, like where they are throwing out freebies. It's always the larges and mostly the extra larges. And I either they already like handed those out and those were the first boxes they went through or something, or they haven't gotten to them yet, and that's they were on the smalls and mediums still. But I mean, it was fun. I can't wait to do it again next year. The panels that I went to were kind of interesting. And to tease an upcoming episode of our podcast, I was on the Podcrash podcast live recording, which was also a panel done with comedian Chris Gore, who his thing is he actually goes onto other people's podcasts and crashes them.
Okay.
And
I think I get it. I'm not really 100%.
Well, he wants to be on this podcast.
So he's going to crash our podcast.
He's a guest, but he's going to... It's called Crashing It.
I understand.
And he more or less is the host for that episode.
Yeah.
Even though we are still technically the host. It's because what he'll do is he'll chop up what we what someone records on the podcast that he's on, and he'll make his own version of it, too. Yeah.
So he's going to come onto our podcast for however long. We're going to have a normal podcast. He's going to be on some of it, all of it, whatever.
Right.
And we're going to release our normal podcast, as like we normally would, with Chris on it.
Yes.
And then he's going to take whatever...
He's going to take that podcast.
That he's on.
Yeah, he's going to chop it up.
And then use it for his, and then so...
Right, he'll take what he does on our podcast, and this is on any of the podcasts that he crashes. He's going to take the parts that he likes the best... And he's going to chop those out. He's going to play them on his podcast. And then that part of the segment, he'll actually talk about what was discussed on that podcast.
Yeah.
So kind of just break it down. Kind of like what we're going to do with my live recording there, which was only about 3 minutes. We're just going to chop that out when they publish it, and we're going to talk about it and listen to it.
What was this panel? Like, it was a panel in front of a bunch of people.
It was just a panel. It wasn't really a standard panel. It was in a panel room. But he was recording a live episode of his Podcrash.
Okay.
So what he did was he took 12 different people that have podcasts, myself, you know, included, and gave everyone about 3 to 5 minutes to talk with him.
Okay.
And then they would move to the next one. So he was just trying to do quick little crashes, as many as he could within an hour.
Yeah.
And I think he did get through like 12 or 13 of them.
That's pretty cool.
You know, I don't want to really get into like what we talked about and whatnot.
Yeah.
But the other panel that I was on was actually pretty crazy because I found out, I want to say it was Friday, that there was a brand new Deadpool game being announced at Comic-Con.
Okay.
And it was going to be at the Marvel Video Games panel.
Don't you know ahead of time going in, like, what panels are when and where?
They have a full schedule, and it's like pages and pages.
Okay. So you were like, you saw in the dossier or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, Deadpool game.
Well, it was announced that day that he was going to have a game.
Okay.
And it was kind of like a silent announcement because it was only like online.
Oh, okay.
And I assumed that there was going to be like footage and an official announcement at the Marvel Video Games panel.
Yeah.
Which was that same day, and it was like several hours away. So I went and investigated like the line. Mm-hmm. And the line was already outside the building for this thing.
Sure.
And I'm just like, really? I don't want to stand here for 2 hours and maybe have a chance to get in because those, again, those lines get so big so fast that you could be waiting and they could fill up the room and you could be that next person waiting to get in there and you can't get in there.
Yeah.
And then you just wasted 2 hours.
It's not like they redo it. It's once and it's over. Yeah.
Exactly. And they can only fill up so many seats per like fire marshal and all that
stuff.
So I was kind of disappointed and I really wanted to get into this panel. Instead, I went over to the hotel that's, like, right next to and, like, connected to the convention center. I think it was a Marriott because they had a Nintendo video game lounge.
Okay.
I was like, all right, well, I'll go and check that out because I, you know, hadn't been over there yet. Go over there. you know, it was pretty lame, honestly. But luckily there was a Starbucks in the hotel, and there was, like, no line, whereas the lines for the Starbucks in the convention center, because there's three of them, were just, like, 45-minute waits.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
So, like, all right, well, I'll just, you know, give me some Starbucks and then take my ass back over to the convention center, get my Starbucks, start walking back from the hotel to the convention center, and I'm walking in front of the convention center entrances, because there's, like, there's 15 different entrances, because this thing is so huge.
Yeah.
I can't even, if you've never seen it or never been there, I can't really even, like, give you any type of, like, example and how to relate to how big this convention center is. But I'm walking, and I'm walking, and a couple days prior, actually, I think it was the day prior, you know, there's so many activists that attend these things with their megaphones, and they're preaching religion or politics or something. And there's, you know, I'm used to it at this point, because this is the second full day. And I hear this megaphone guy behind me just saying this random stuff. This, like, crazy, partially insane. He was swearing. I kept on hearing, like, follow me for something sweet. And I'm just, like, thinking in my head without turning around. I'm like, all right, I do not want to turn around, because then he's going to come up to me, or my luck, you know, I'm going to get dragged into something ridiculous.
Yeah, don't make eye contact at all.
Exactly.
Costs.
I keep on walking forward. I hear this megaphone just getting louder and louder behind me. And all of a sudden, I feel this touch on my shoulder. And then this megaphone, like, right in my ear saying, you need to follow me for something sweet. And I'm like, ready to turn around and just punch someone.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no. I wasn't even paying attention. I was walking forward. But I turn around, and it's Deadpool. With this entourage. He's got, like, these two hot chicks and, like, these bunch of dudes with cameras that are filming him. And it's what it is an actor that they paid to play Deadpool. And he played it amazing, like, to the T.
Sweet.
And there's just, like, this entourage with him, and he's just megaphones blaring, you know, swearing, saying stupid stuff. I love chimichangas, and...
Well, you have to.
Exactly. I mean, it was, like, right out of the comics, like, some of the things that he was saying. And he keeps on walking, and I'm just, like, kind of shocked. I'm like, because I love Deadpool.
And I think it's the same guy that I follow on Twitter.
Maybe.
I think it's the same, it's, like, The Real Deadpool or something, at The Real Deadpool, whatever.
Well, that's for the video game.
I've been following him on Twitter for, like, over a year.
Oh, really?
I think he was... But I never know with the guy, because I don't know if he's just talking, like he's the character or not.
Right.
Or if he was actually the guy dressed like Deadpool at the megaphone.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
But either way.
But, yeah, he kept on going, and I'm just, like, in a state of shock. And I'm just like, what is going on?
Because people just do that kind of stuff all the time there.
Exactly.
At the conventions, you're just like, all right, just some dude, you know.
Since there's so many people and there's so much going on, like... For me to be in, like, this moment in this situation that just happened is the reason that I was in shock, because it was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
What just happened? What's about to happen? And since Deadpool just kept on moving forward, like, towards one of the entrances, what he was doing is he was just gathering up a crowd of fans to follow him with his entourage, who was videotaping this whole thing. And I guess this videotape is supposed to go on the actual DeadpoolGame.com website eventually. Because it was a publicity stunt.
Yes. But how do you differentiate some dude in a costume at a Comic-Con if it's a regular fan or, you know...
Was this guy who was in this Deadpool suit, like, this smart where he just brought all of his friends and he's like, let's just pretend to do a publicity stunt?
Yeah, exactly.
So I had no idea. But luckily, I grabbed one of his, like, entourage folks and I'm just like, dude, what's going on here? What's happening? He's like... This is a publicity stunt, as you probably already know. And I'm like, yeah. And if you follow us, we're heading up to the Marvel Video Games panel, and Deadpool is crashing the panel to announce his game officially.
That's fantastic.
I was in.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm following you. I need to get into this. I wanted to get into this.
You were just hanging out in this area because you missed out on the Marvel Games panel anyway, so...
I didn't want to wait in the line.
Yeah.
So it just all fell together, and it was like, all right, so I'm following him around. And this was, again, like 2 hours before the panel was even starting.
Oh, was that early?
And, I mean, Deadpool goes inside the convention center. He's still on his megaphone. I got a picture of security stopping him and telling him to use the megaphone inside, which was so funny. And he did.
Stop using the megaphone?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we go upstairs. We go to the back entrance of this room where, like, everyone lets out, not where you actually get in, so it was actually just the exit only, because that's where he was going in.
As he usually would.
And we're standing there, and again, it's Deadpool, these two hot chicks, like 10 of his entourage that were like part of this publicity stunt that were taping this whole thing. And like me and like 30 or 40 other people.
Yeah. Their little backpacks and your...
Yeah, I mean, I had like my poster tube and everything, and I'm just like, this is fun. And I mean, this whole time, Deadpool is just talking out of his ass.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he went over to one of the, this one random chick, and he just started hitting on her. Awesome. He's just like, so, do you have a boyfriend? She's like, yeah. He's like, I don't care. So where do you live? And he just kept on doing his thing.
Yeah.
And then someone, this one guy, I don't know if he was like a paid heckler or something, because sometimes, you know, in these publicity stunts, they'll have like a normal dressed guy as like the paid heckler.
Yeah.
He kept on just saying this dumb stuff. And it was references to like Deadpool comics.
Oh boy.
And Deadpool, this actor, heard him and he just looks over to him and he gets really close to his face and he's just like, man, you dorks have a problem. And this guy just kept on going, and Deadpool's like, I don't even know if I can handle this anymore. You know what? I want to tell everyone a story. This is a story that I heard, and this is quoting, well, paraphrasing Deadpool. Yeah. This is a story I heard about what happens in the men's bathroom at Comic-Con, because they're not used to seeing so many tits. And he goes into this spiel where, talking about the boobs, talking about the nerds, not seeing boobs that much, because there's so many people. And then he's like, you know, when you see a nerd go into the bathroom, there's actually three parts of the men's bathroom at Comic-Con. There's the urinal, there's the stalls, and there's the pee-pee touching area. But, I mean, he just carried on with just these random stories. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it could have been just, you know, improv,
was scripted. Or yeah, improv off
the top of his head. And I mean, he was just really in the role, which was great. So we're waiting there outside of this panel, and security comes over again. They're like, you can't stand by the exits like this. It's a fire marshal thing. So Deadpool's just saying, you know, F you this, F you that, I'm Deadpool, I can do what I want. And security's starting to get pissed at the actor because he's in his role.
Yeah.
And his entourage is like trying to talk to security, like, no, no, this is, Marvel knows about this, you know, this is somewhat scripted, and we need these people, because there's, you know, like 50 of us combined standing in front of these exits. It's like, we need these people, you know, to come in with us, because this is part of the whole publicity stunt. And, you know, this lasted for like 30 minutes, and there were some people at security actually, like, just, you know, groups of, small little groups of people where security would just surround them and then just start walking in a circle, moving them away from this thing. So, you know, it turned into like 40 people to like 30 people.
Yeah, yeah.
I kept on moving because I just had like one eye on Deadpool and another eye on like security, so I didn't get like, you know, kicked out.
Ejected, yeah.
And then the doors open. And when the doors open, I actually shot video of this, but my camera on my phone just did not want to shoot it right for some reason, which is unfortunate because it was literally from walking in to him crashing it to him leaving it. I had that whole thing.
Awesome.
It was like 8 minutes long on video.
Well, let's go back a second. Like, so they're in the middle of their whatever, presenting the Captain America 2 game.
They were actually in the middle. They were right about to start talking about their newest video game that they're launching called Hitmonkey.
Okay, that's right. That's what they said the panel was going to be about or something.
They were actually going to talk about it
in
that panel. You know, they were also talking about like the Marvel Heroes MMO, which is actually free to download, free to play. There's no level cap, which is awesome.
Nice.
It's done by the dude who did Diablo.
That's awesome.
It looked really, really cool.
Because I'm officially off of DC Universe, so I'm waiting for this to come out. So
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
It looks so cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this panel was already going on, and they were talking about all these other games.
And you don't see any of this.
No, because I'm outside.
You're outside.
We're all outside. The doors are closed and everything.
Yeah.
Door opens. Deadpool rushes in with his entourage, and then followed by us.
Does he have a megaphone at this point again, or?
Well, he busts out the megaphone.
Yeah.
And starts just screaming in the megaphone, telling them, you know, F Hitmonkey.
Because Hitmonkey was a character in the Deadpool comic.
That messed around with Deadpool's head.
Right, yeah.
He was driving Deadpool insane.
Or,
yeah. And Deadpool's like, no, 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 screw this game. Just megaphone, walking up the aisle. I mean, yes, it was probably planned, but, you know, even the guys at the podium and everything at the panel up front, they were playing into it perfectly. I mean, it was executed perfectly, this whole thing, from when I saw it from start to literally finish. And he gets up on stage behind the podium, and he starts, like, flicking these name badges of these real people, like, off of the table. Because you know how, like, in a panel, they're sitting there with name, like, their nameplate? He starts flicking them off, and he's like, I'm the new president of High Moon Studios. And then, like, the president of High Moon Studios is just like, what? And then Deadpool just, like, pushes him aside, sits down, like, grabs a marker, writes Deadpool on his thing, and just puts it in front of him.
Awesome.
But, I mean, he announced the game. The crowd was just shocked. And that was probably one of the coolest parts, was seeing the fact that this crowd, which I was going to be a part of, had no idea this was going to happen.
Exactly.
And they're all just shocked, laughing hysterically because of the things that were flying out of his mouth.
Yeah.
He showed the trailer once, and after it ended, he said something along the lines of, like, that was so awesome! Play it again for the nerds! So he showed the whole trailer again. And then, you know, after the second time he...
It does look awesome. I saw it online. Oh, yeah. It does look like it could be a lot of fun. Yeah.
But after the second trailer, he's just like, well, there's nothing else to say but Deadpool mic drop! And then he just drops the mic and just raises his hands up and just walks off the stage. And everyone's just, like, laughing and clapping. And at that point, like, they went into the normal panel, and it was at the Q&A part, I guess. And people were, like, lined up, started asking questions. I was like, nope, I don't need to see this. That's all I needed to see. That's
always the time to leave the panels.
I'm out.
Right.
And I left.
You get one goofball question. It's usually the second or third person up there, mm-hmm. and it doesn't make any sense. And it's usually like, how could I start writing for Marvel comic books? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, time to go, you know, so. Yeah,
well,
the Q&A is the worst.
But the fact that I spent like 2 hours or an hour and a half prior to Deadpool doing his mic drop.
Yeah, exactly.
I that's all I needed. I was just like...
Right.
The only reason I wanted to go to this panel was to see, you know, the possibility of Deadpool footage.
Yeah.
But I got to experience this Deadpool publicity stunt firsthand.
Yeah, right.
And it's over. I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that was like one of the best things that really happened at Comic-Con to me. Because
there you
it was
go.
Just so random. It wasn't planned.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. I mean, it was just a lot of standing around, but I mean... The actor who was playing Deadpool was just entertaining everyone, just saying nonsense the whole time. So.
That's beautiful. Comic-Con making dreams come true yet again.
Something like that. Something like that. But, you know, I'm happy that I was able to really experience just something cool and unique, because that wasn't planned. It wasn't in the dossier of Comic-Con or anything.
The dossier.
It was just so random and sporadic, and I was just right place, right time.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Yes, yes.
So are we still on Comic-Con?
I think we're going to take a quick break.
You want to go to a break?
Yeah, before we get into all this Marvel craziness.
The other big news out of Comic-Con was all the Marvel Studios.
The Phase 2.
Phase 2, right.
Yeah. Phase 2
right.
announcements like crazy at the panel. And still to this day, which, you know, this is what, like 3 or 4 days after Comic-Con officially ended on Sunday, I mean, there's still just information leaking out like crazy. I mean, it's a tidal wave of just
well, it's funny because
updates and
Marvel
and
is sending out stuff now that you sent out like on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
which is just weird. You know, like I already saw this. What's Marvel doing? And I look back and like, this is the first time they're actually saying this.
Oh,
to, like the
as
internet
far,
nation.
As far as like updating their Facebook or their
whatever.
Website,
yeah, right. I'll get, like, a tweet from Marvel, like, hey, here's the thing for the logo card for Ant-Man. Like, awesome. I saw it on Saturday when Dan tweeted it, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's Wednesday. Come on, guys, you know?
Exactly. Well, I mean, it just goes to show that, like, some people understand the whole content, online content principles, especially, like, news things. Like,
right.
Getting them out there as fast as possible.
This is their own story, you know, and they were scooped a million times.
There should have been someone,
like,
as soon as they showed that that first title card, whatever it was, whether it was Captain America, Winter Soldier, or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, there should have been someone, like, in that room with their laptop open, online, just, like, updating their Facebook, like,
exactly.
taking a picture, a point of view picture from where they're at, like, all right, there you go.
Right.
And then
I follow all of the major Marvel writers on Twitter, so, like, I... A lot of this information I got from you, a lot of it I got from conversations, you know, between them, you know, like Hickman talking to Fraction and Bendis and, you know, right. Brubaker and all those guys, you know. But, and then the thing Rush Limbaugh said about.
I don't even want to talk about that.
Batman. But that's a different story.
I don't even want to talk about that. It's just.
But anyways, like, Marvel's just now, they were sending out some tweets during Comic-Con, but it was like, here, get the check in and get the get glue thing for Thanos, you know, and like just
it's yeah,
nothing to do with anything, you know. Like they knew when they were announcing these big things,
right?
Do they want to keep it like, you know, for the people that are actually at Comic-Con first, and then
I think that's what
give
it
us
is
the rest of us, but it's going to be out there anyway.
Yeah, the moment that you
know,
leave,
it's not like you can't bring your iPhone into Comic-Con and send a quick article right. off, you know, right. like you're in line doing nothing, might as well like.
It's just like
play
when
your phone.
It's just like when the doors opened on Friday, the first no on Saturday because Saturday was the day of the panel.
Yeah,
Saturday night was when the panel happened for Iron Man 3. But when they opened the doors on Saturday, every day Thursday, Friday, and Saturday that they opened the doors, I went straight for the Marvel booth.
Yeah, sure.
Just out of principle,
absolutely.
The first 2 days, I got my picture taken with the Hall of Armors, which yeah. was sweet.
That's
and
really cool.
I was watery-eyed. Because they just all look so amazing.
Those are the actual ones from the movies, the actual props.
It's the actual set pieces that are actually in the Hall of Armor in his lab or
that's going
his
to
house.
Be in Iron Man yeah. 3, but were they the same armors that were used in 1 and 2? Or does it matter?
Well, yeah, once the first movie happened, they had those little props like in his Hall of Armor that he was building.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, all the same.
But I was just wondering if they reused the same ones.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Once they build it, I mean, they...
So the one on the right is the one actually worn in Avengers.
Right.
And it's going to be in the right. background of Iron
right.
Man 3.
Right.
And you were standing in front of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And
they could have just rebuilt them.
They said know. Each of those weighs about 180 pounds a piece.
Oh, I can imagine.
But getting to my story before we take a quick break here, I went in and rushed in on Saturday, went straight to the Marvel booth, and that's when I saw it. And it was Iron Man 3 armor was just there on a spinner,
yeah.
and it was
yeah.
just like...
Was it full size?
It was full size.
It looked
and everything.
Like it. From,
yeah.
Because I saw the video footage of like the kids' Iron Man
yeah.
costume contest.
Yeah, it was full size. I mean, there's a lot of people that have a problem with the fact that it's too much gold, but at the same time...
But it's what the armor looks like now in the comics. It looks...
His armor's going to change in every movie that he's in, because
yeah.
that's what Iron Man is.
Maybe once or twice.
Exactly. But getting back to how you were saying, people at the Marvel panel, you know, have the ability to post articles with their phones.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw it, I took pictures, and I posted an article with my phone right then and there.
Yeah, exactly.
And just to kind of make it come back full circle, that's the whole reason I brought that up. And,
right.
You know, immediately once I posted that and tweeted that and everything, I mean, the website blew up. And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure I was one of the first people, but it's funny because Marvel didn't even release a picture until, like, maybe 20 minutes after I had already posted.
Oh, okay.
You would think that they would have posted something, like, the moment the doors open.
Sure. I don't know if they want to funnel things out, you know, like, sporadically. They want to stagger the information, so it's not like, as soon as you wake up and look at your phone in the morning, there's, like, a million different, like, things from Marvel. Like, hey, we're doing this, and this, you know. It'd be, like, overwhelming, but still, like... When they make an announcement on a panel, they should announce it online.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, at the same time.
I mean, there's going to be somewhat of a delay, you know, a few minutes to type it up or whatever,
yeah.
unless you type it up in advance, but still. I don't understand why and Marvel's not the only place that does it. There's a lot of companies that do that, where they'll announce something and then they won't post it for, like, 2 days later after
right.
everyone else online's already posted about it.
Everyone else scooped them on their own thing.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. But, yeah, seeing that Iron Man 3 armor was... Pretty awesome.
I think it looks awesome.
But
I think it looks great.
I think we should just hold off on going more in depth
now
about that suit.
Into movies, so
we can take our quick break here. You
yeah.
can listen to some royalty-free music for about 10 seconds.
Bop, 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 bop.
And we will be right back with Superhero Authority Podcast on SuperheroAuthority.com.
Hoo-yah!
Welcome back to Superhero Authority Podcast on SuperheroAuthority.com. I hope you enjoyed that lovely music.
I'm ready to go to sleep now.
I'll make sure that it's
I don't even want to do this next segment. I'm just going to hit pause.
You don't want to do this next segment.
Let's do it anyway.
This next segment is the best, probably, discussion topics of this entire episode.
Here, all right, well, if you say so.
I mean, let's just go back to what we were talking about with the Iron Man suit, the new one in Iron Man 3. I mean, we said that, yeah, it has too much gold, but at the same time...
I don't think it does. I think it looks great.
I think it looks fantastic. It looks very bleeding edge suit. And
it looks like what's in the current issues of Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, in the whole Avengers X-Men thing, which is not getting any better, by the way. It's just not.
But the movies, in general, seem to be getting better and better. And first, you know, I want to say that I'm very happy that Iron Man 3 is the only movie in this Phase 2 of Marvel's cinematic universe that's after the Avengers movie, which is building up to the... Phase 2 means it's building up to Avengers 2.
Right.
I'm happy that Iron Man is the only movie that has a number in its title, because it's Iron Man 3.
Yes.
And I'm even more happy that they took Thor and Captain America and gave them subtitles.
Right, instead of just Cap 2, Thor 2.
Exactly. I mean, Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I mean, right there...
I want to go see it right now.
You have your villain right there. In the title card.
And they set it up perfectly in the first one. I mean, they could have done another quick snippet scene, maybe. Maybe
where,
something...
Where Bucky dies, you mean?
During the credits to set it up, maybe.
Well, he fell in a giant...
You
didn't canyon.
Actually, see him, you saw him fell off a train,
and it was in the cold and freezing too.
Right, right.
So you know, it's going to be just like in the comics where
it was World War II. There was Russians all over Eastern Europe.
It might not
you know.
Be Russians in the movie.
It should be,
but at the same token, I mean, he's going to be frozen.
That's
and
why
found and
that's why his name's the Winter Soldier. It's like the October Guard.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
for those G.I. Joe fans out there,
and Thor, The Dark World.
The Dark World. I have no idea what that's going to be about.
I have a theory that's actually publishing tomorrow on SuperheroAuthority.com of what The Dark World is.
Well, we can talk about it now.
We can talk about it right now.
Yeah, okay. What's The Dark World?
I think The Dark World is not anything in the Nine Realms.
Okay.
Like, none of those planets. Like, it's not the Dark Elf planet. It's not Suitors, or however you pronounce
Surtur.
His name. Surtur's.
Surtur.
It's not his planet. It's not Hela's planet.
Yeah.
I think the Dark World is actually some kind of a reference to the Avengers movie.
Okay.
Because Thanos and the other were on a dark world.
Could be.
And maybe Thanos makes an appearance. Maybe he doesn't.
Sure.
But you can bet that with Loki being, quote-unquote, dealt with by Odin...
Yeah.
Because he, you know, Thor took him back after the Avengers, back to Asgard. And I think that the Dark World implies that maybe Thor and the Warriors 3 go back to that planet where Thanos and the other aren't there anymore, obviously.
Maybe.
And investigate.
Oh, yeah, to investigate where the Tesseract maybe came from, or...
Or just, you know, because Loki tells them where that dark world is, that's why they go there and investigate it.
Right.
And
yeah, because he was there.
And that starts to set up Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oy vey.
And also starts to set up the fact that Thanos is more or less the main villain that they're going to have to fight in Avengers 2. So
Thanos is coming.
That's my theory of what the dark world means.
Could be.
The
dark makes a lot of sense.
Is a reference to the Avengers. Because that was a really, really dark world that they were on.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't really a world. Maybe it was kind of just a dimension.
Like
I don't know.
A staging area.
But it was dark. That's kind of just where I'm basing my opinion on that.
It could have something to do with the Negative Zone, although that's getting into Fantastic Four and out of Marvel Studios' hands.
Right.
Wow.
What'd you do?
I just scratched a cut I had on my wrist that I got from work.
You
can edit that.
But you know what? If I'm right, and they do show Thor and Sif and the Warriors 3 go to investigate that dark world.
Yeah, they could bring on a whole other set of villains or whatever.
Well, they'll probably have a whole set of villains, but
that has nothing to do with what happened in Avengers.
But I think that just is really the setup of Thanos possibly showing up in Guardians of the Galaxy somehow, some way. Which then leads to Avengers 2. You know,
I can't believe they're actually going to make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Well, you know.
Have they do they really run out of other characters to make movies about already?
See, I have mixed feelings about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, I know you like Rocket Raccoon.
That's the whole reason that I'm excited for it.
But that's, I don't know if I want to see an actual movie with a CGI clothed raccoon talking with a British accent and shooting a gun.
Who's a cocky little bastard.
Well, it's a raccoon.
Yeah.
I dislike it. I tolerate it as is when it shows up in the comic books because it's like, okay, some people like this for some reason. Right. I don't know why.
Right. Well, you know, if Guardians of the Galaxy, which it is part of Phase 2 and part of the setup for Avengers 2, I mean, that just means that we're possibly going to see the Guardians of the Galaxy show up in Avengers 2 to help fight Thanos.
Maybe. I don't know.
You would think that
I would have been better off with them doing like I don't know, like doing Captain Marvel. You know, because that's a space hero.
I'd rather see Black Panther or Doctor Strange.
Yeah, Nova, even maybe.
Yeah,
like Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know. That sounds pretty weak.
That could be their biggest flop.
No one.
I mean, it'll probably make a lot of money because it's Marvel Studios.
Is it? But and people will go see it. But yeah. Like, I don't own a single issue of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Neither do I.
I don't own a comic. I don't own a trade paperback. But you have that Thanos Imperative trade,
yeah,
or hardcover that you let me borrow. I made it through half of it and had to give it back because I was just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I was like. Not that into the whole Annihilation thing when it happened, and then
the problem is that they're taking
Adam Warlock.
They're taking a big risk with bringing what I would consider like C level characters.
There's not even B list.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Like C list characters, and you know, if there's big fans of Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm sorry, but
I don't know why.
I mean,
you can like, I don't whatever know. You like. I don't get it.
I don't get it either, and I don't get why it's going to have a movie. I was thinking that maybe since Marvel is owned by Disney, that Guardians of the Galaxy could have been a really great, like, Pixar Marvel movie.
Sure.
And I still think it would be an amazing Pixar movie.
Keep it loosely, you know, intertwined with the rest of the Marvel movie universe.
Somewhat.
You know, it's in the same reality, but they're not really going to affect each other. Maybe that's what they're going to do with this movie anyway. You're going to see a little glimpse of, you know, what may lead into the Avengers movie, but it's not going to play a big part in actually, you know.
Right. They're not going to show up in Avengers 2.
Right.
Because it's a Pixar movie.
Right. I mean, even if it's a regular, you know, mostly live action, but, you right. know, predominantly I mean, CGI movie.
The only know? Thing I can think of is that if Guardians of the Galaxy could possibly be in Avengers 2, it would be, like, not the whole movie, but maybe towards the end, kind of as the cavalry comes in and helps the Avengers defeat Thanos.
I think what's so good about Phase 1 was that everything pretty much revolved around S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
And that was pretty viable, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
as far as movies go, you know, like, you gotta take everything with a grain of salt and, you know, suspend some disbelief. But like, it still kind of made some sense. You know, you could wrap your brain around it. When they go flying off in outer space for a raccoon and a tree guy, you know?
Yeah.
So, what? Say what?
How do you pull that? Okay, if they just had Rocket Raccoon and not the tree guy, okay, you know, maybe, but like, what's the tree guy going to do?
Grow, shrink.
Is he going to be, it's going to be weird. It's going to be awkward.
Yeah. And we're experiencing a big drought, so he's not going to be that mighty of a tree.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm sorry, but like, I need to see a trailer. I need to see a trailer.
I need him to say, "Just kidding, guys. We're not really making Guardians of the Galaxy."
Or that.
You know, just joking.
We ran some test footage, and yeah, it's not going to work. So we're pushing Ant-Man up, and
Ant-Man is crazy enough for making an Ant-Man movie. I want to go see it because I like Hank Pym.
I want to see it because what I heard about the test footage sounded amazing. I don't know if you actually heard the detailed description.
Oh, yeah.
But for the viewer, or the listeners, not the viewers, the listeners out there, just to give you kind of the quick synopsis of this test footage, and it's really no spoilers because it's test footage.
Yeah.
But it was a big hallway.
Yeah, this stuff may or may not even make it into a trailer, which may or may not make it into the real movie.
Exactly.
Anyway, so.
I guess there was this big, long hallway, and on one end, there was an elevator with two, like, guards with sunglasses and guns, and you see this little, like, half-inch or inch-tall guy come out of one of the vents in this hallway, and he starts running at these guards, and the guards don't know right away because he's so tiny,
yeah.
But then they see something moving.
It's hard to see.
they see something moving, so they, like, you know, draw their guns, and I guess Ant-Man jumps up on one of the guns and is running up the barrel, jumps up off the barrel towards one of the guy's faces, and just clocks him in the face and knocks him out.
While still, like, an inch high.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then he grows really big after he knocks the guy out, does, like, a flip, and then, like, flings the other guy out of a window. And, like, that was the test footage.
Nice.
And the reaction, from what I've heard by everyone, was just that it was really brutal looking and violent because he was so tiny.
Yeah.
And when Ant-Man's really tiny, he still has the normal strength of
right.
a normal size guy.
Of a regular scientist.
Exactly. And
it's not like
it was super brutal, but I guess the biggest question is like the size changing.
Yeah.
And even though it wasn't full CG because it was test footage.
Yeah.
It was enough where people bought into it.
Sure.
And I can't wait, because Ant-Man potentially leads to Phase 3 being Avengers in Avengers 3 versus Ultron.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Hank Pym, who's Ant-Man, leads into so many good Avengers storylines himself that it's just, you have to bring this character in. I was disappointed they didn't bring Hank Pym into the first Avengers.
Yeah.
Just to have him in a scene or two.
Just like an Easter egg as like a scientist in the background or something. Just hear his name.
I mean, I'm sure they didn't cast him yet, so, I mean, just to drop his name. Yeah. Something, you know, like, like when Stark's trying to get Banner, he's like, yeah, the first, or, you know, all the top floors of Stark Tower, we wanted you to come over. They're all R&D. You'll love it there, you know?
Yeah.
He, like, pricks them or something, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, he could have easily just dropped Hank Pym's name.
Oh, yeah, he could have said, like, I need to introduce you to,
you
know, Dr. Henry Pym.
Have you met Hank Pym?
Yeah.
You know, bam, and then hit him or something. Like,
yeah.
That would have been cool. You know, like, in the X-Men movies, is kind of not great as those were, they still, like, teased other characters that weren't in the movies yet. You know, like, they had Remy LeBeau's name pop up on a computer screen at one point, and all that kind of thing. That kind of stuff is fun.
Yeah, those are the little Easter eggs.
Right.
And those are always fun to find,
I mean, there's plenty in Avengers as is, but Hank Pym is such a great Avengers character. And you bring in, you have Ant-Man, he was Giant Man, you know, and then he was Yellow Jacket, who was just Hank Pym gone crazy, you know?
Like, Ant-Man 2 could be him turning into Yellow Jacket.
Yeah, which is awesome.
And just going completely insane.
Mm-hmm. He creates Ultron. Ultron turns against him and the Avengers and becomes, like, this homicidal robot, you know, artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Who's, like, a great Iron Man villain.
Who also creates Vision.
Who creates Vision.
And sends him against the Avengers. I mean, yes. There's so many storylines, and if they're bringing in Ant-Man into this universe and not bringing in Ultron,
I will
be pissed.
They would have to eventually.
I'd be so pissed. But I want Ultron in this movie.
In the first movie?
Yes. Because Ultron,
I don't see how you would justify making an Ant-Man movie and not have Ultron in it.
Well, especially since Ultron originally, when he was created, was like his assistant.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
he wanted to create someone who could help him with his research.
And he created this robot, this artificial intelligence, with his own brainwaves. So he's got, like, this weird, like, daddy complex, because he views Hank Pym as being his creator, but he kind of is Hank Pym.
Right.
You know, but just with, like, this really kind of weird sense of, like, morality. Not really morality, but just, like,
just creationism, more or less.
Yeah, it just,
it's the whole daddy complex, like you said. I mean, it's a love-hate type of
relationship. But it's this whole logic-based, you know, this kind of thing. If if Dr. Spock was a killer android, you know, like if things don't make sense, they have to be put in a certain order, you know. He's OCD.
Yeah.
He's a robot with OCD.
Yeah. And he's a robot who...
But Hank Pym was also an original Avenger in the comic books. And yes. So was the Wasp. Yes. So do you bring the Wasp in, or Janet Van Dyne, you know?
Well, I would
think... Do you have her in that movie, too?
I would think you have her in that movie, but she's not the Wasp yet.
Sure.
Maybe she becomes the Wasp in, like, Ant-Man 2.
Yeah.
If the first Ant-Man's a success.
Yeah.
Which I would probably...
She's kind of, you know...
I would say Ant-Man's going to be a bigger success than Guardians of the Galaxy.
She's kind of like Ant-Girl, you know?
Yeah.
But with her own kind of setup.
I mean, maybe she'll just be in it as just Janet, his girlfriend or wife or whatever.
Sure.
And doesn't have any special powers yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's sad to say that there's more excitement for Ant-Man than Guardians of the Galaxy because of all the connections that Ant-Man and Hank Pym have to the Avengers, whereas Guardians of the Galaxy, like, where's the connection?
Where's the connection to the rest of the Marvel Universe, really? They're just kind of out in space doing whatever.
Guarding the galaxy, you know?
More, you know, they can go do so. You know, I just don't want to read it or see a movie about it.
Yeah.
You know, that,
I mean, we'll see it.
To be blunt, you know.
We'll see it. I mean, we're suckers like that. And probably the majority of our listeners will see it too. But,
yeah.
But Ant-Man's where it's at. I can't stop thinking and talking about Ant-Man.
Yeah, there's so many cool things you can do, especially with the CGI, the special effects they're doing now. But will he be Giant Man too? Like, there's like so many things. Like, you don't know what they're gonna do with this movie. And
I wouldn't expect them to actually have him be Giant Man because it's an Ant-Man movie.
Yeah,
maybe. I think that.
But you couldn't call the movie Hank Pym.
I think
many faces of Hank Pym.
I think having a movie as with Hank Pym as Giant Man and just having Giant Man in a movie in general is just. Maybe more cheesy.
It's very 50s B-movie.
Than anything else.
It's very Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, which is kind of where the character kind of came from, you know?
I mean, if you're going to do Giant Man eventually in a Marvel movie, you definitely have to have him fighting the Hulk.
Yes.
Just like in the Ultimate movie.
Yeah.
Where he had him just like in his hand and then the Hulk just ripped Giant Man's hand open and then jumped at his throat and just started just choking him.
Right. But that's kind of like the dynamic you're going to see if he's Ant-Man with proportional strength.
Yeah.
Or not really proportional, but with, you know, regular strength levels of a normal-sized person.
Being
it's going to look like, you know, how Hulk fought Giant Man. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. That's really the coolest draw, though.
Yeah.
I want to see that test footage. And unfortunately, at that panel, they made sure... They must have had, like, a huge security staff, because they made sure that no one was taking any video or pictures of the test footage for Ant-Man, and the actual footage of Iron Man 3 that they showed, too, which is...
anything on the internets of either of those, yeah.
For video, no. Just,
right.
Like, actual worded descriptions, which is... You can see them both on SuperheroAuthority.com.
Of course.
But getting back to Iron Man, I guess... In that footage that they showed...
They showed Mandarin,
and from what people have reacted to seeing Mandarin, A, he looks like a badass.
Yeah.
And B, he does something or other that is very badass.
Sweet.
In that clip. But more importantly is, and I don't know if, you know, the listeners really want to hear this, but spoiler alert, but I guess Iron Man, well, Tony Stark... has a mental bond that he develops with his suit.
Yes.
Where it's not like Extremis, which it's really pissing me off for the fact that everyone keeps on thinking that this is going to go full-blown Extremis storyline, which the only part of the Extremis storyline that I'm pretty sure that this is going to cover is the fact that there's a nanotech virus that's released.
Okay.
And Iron Man is not going to have his suit of armor within his bone hollows, so he can just think and put it on. But... from that clip, from what I heard, he actually thinks to put his suit on, and his suit pieces just come flying out of nowhere and actually go on to him.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I don't want to see a suit coming out of his skin.
Right. Because as cool as it was to see, like in the Avengers movie, when he's just walking in his penthouse,
And it's just removing it all?
There's, like, the thing that comes out of the floor and it's taking all the pieces off and, you know, retracting.
That's kind of, like, a tease to the fact that, all right, his technology is getting better and better with this suit. You thought
that thing was cool? That was the beta, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's going to be
well, even before really... Even after that, though, the whole thing where he was wearing the bracelets.
Yeah.
And it was able to scan the bracelets and put the suit on when he was falling after he got thrown out of the window by Loki.
Right.
And,
right.
And the next logical phase is, all right, he can think to put the suit on and the pieces just come flying out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And just assemble on his body. I mean, that's
and they're going that's through cool. 30, 40 years of Stark innovation from the comics and doing them in a couple years. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, they went from the suitcase, you know?
Yeah.
And two and... That's next year, correct?
That's in May,
and so is Thor is in November next
Thor
year.
Thor is November next year, yeah. Thor is going to actually start, I think, casting really soon and shooting really soon.
Are they keeping with two a year, or are they going up to three?
Right now they're doing two a year, but I've actually heard from some people that I've talked to that they could potentially move it up to three per year.
Yeah.
Come, like, 2015 or beyond,
mm-hmm.
which... I mean, I probably wouldn't want more than three Marvel movies a year.
Yeah, agreed.
But I have no issue with having three Marvel movies a year.
If they're good. You know, the worst one, I don't know, Hulk, Captain America. I mean, they're not...
For phase one,
they're not great. You know, like, they're not as good.
They're going to be a lot better than... They're going to be a lot better than Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Something else Well, speaking of movies and Marvel, We saw Spider-Man during our break.
Yes, we did see Spider-Man.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Do you want to take a quick break before we get into Spider-Man?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to...
That's what they call in the industry tickling your ass with a feather.
Yes.
You come back.
We're going to tickle it a little bit, and we're going to come back and talk Amazing Spider-Man on Superhero Authority Podcast on SuperheroAuthority.com.
Hey-o!
Welcome back to Superhero Authority Podcast on SuperheroAuthority.com.
.com.
And we gave you a little teaser that we were going to start talking about the Amazing Spider-Man movie, and let's just dive right into it.
Let's go do it.
I liked it to a point. I think I actually gave it like a 7.5 out of 10 when I reviewed it for SuperheroAuthority.com.
Okay.
There were some issues. One of the biggest things was the fact that it really didn't bring anything new to his quote-unquote origin story, with the exception of the fact that I get what was changed in the basis of this new franchise reboot, with it's following the mystery of Peter Parker's father.
They're actually making the origin part of an overall ongoing story,
mm-hmm.
which is...
Kind of cool.
Neat. So you can kind of tie all of these things back to one thing, as opposed to just a bunch of freak accidents, you know.
Right.
Haphazardly, you have all these animal people running around.
Right.
Trying to kill the spider guy.
Right. Lots of animals, lots of insects.
You know, I mean, it's all, like, the Straczynski run of Amazing Spider-Man, like, referred to all of his villains being, like, these different totems, you know, and mm-hmm. whatever, but... He has a bunch of animal-based villains, you know,
right.
Scorpion, Vulture.
And it's cool that...
Rhino.
It's obviously all going to be based from Oscorp, which they set that up.
Yeah, you didn't see Osborn's face. Like, they showed it, like, when he's walking into the building, like, on that big screen, you know?
Yeah, it was, like, blacked out on the screen.
It was like a silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't cast him yet. I don't know.
Well, some people assume that the end credits scene was Norman Osborn,
I would have to think it was either him or Octavius.
Or Quentin Beck.
Or Mysterio. Yeah, that makes sense, too. Yeah.
Because he kind of appeared and disappeared
right.
from the shadows. I mean, that's kind of magical, like Quentin Beck's
Because
Mysterio.
Nothing else really in the movie, like, Kurt Connors, the Lizard, was delusional and crazy. But the audience wasn't put in that crazy point of view.
Right.
You know, but the end credits scene, you were kind of like, is this what he's experiencing? You know, like, are we in his head kind of?
Is he hallucinating this person, or is this person actually there and
right.
disappearing and reappearing or whatever?
But, I mean, yeah, like, Mysterio would make a lot of sense. He's a classic villain, but he's really lame, you know?
He is lame, but there is the opportunity where they could make him really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe he wouldn't actually even have that standard suit that...
The fishbowl head?
The fishbowl head.
Yeah.
If he has the fishbowl head and they pull it off, right. I mean, sweet, but...
I mean, they already made a Dr. Octopus that didn't look like Roy Osborn. Roy Orbison, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm getting it all mixed together now.
Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison. Roy Orbison.
One of the things I really hated about the movie was the very end.
I remember sitting in the theater and mentally going, this isn't bad. You know, like, I give this movie, like, a solid B.
Yeah.
This is pretty good.
Until
and then
the end.
He started, like, I don't know, like, the construction workers of New York rallied to his aid.
Let's line up these things, because Spider-Man got shot in the leg, and we need to help him get to Oscorp.
Construction
building.
Workers can't move an I-beam in a week that fast. Seeing how long it takes
and it was like,
to construct our inner belt bridge, you know, like...
And it was at night, so, really? So are these guys all, like, just working in the night shift?
Yeah. No, we like Spider-Man, you know? the Daily Bugle got it wrong, you know. Spider-Man's a good guy. The police are wrong. Let's help him. We know exactly where he's going for some reason. It was like, what?
Yeah.
And then the Lizard just got way over the top.
I think that was just a product of bad writing.
He talked too much. He yelled too much.
The Lizard...
too many corny things.
The Lizard should have had, like, no more than two or three sentences.
They should have hulked him.
Yeah.
The Hulk said two words, and it was awesome. The Lizard is kind of like a smaller Hulk. He's green.
Yeah.
He's kind of strong, but, you know, he's like a Ninja Turtle. You know, he's like, he did look like a Ninja Turtle.
Kind of.
With a tail. He's like a dinosaur guy, you know, mm-hmm. like, so he doesn't have to talk, and when he talks, he doesn't have to sound like a scientist, you know?
He should have actually, like, prolonged his S's, like Cobra Commander.
Once a man, useless. That would've been awesome. I don't know, like, so for every, like, scene after I mentally said B, you know, in my head, I was like, whoop, C plus, whoop, it's a C now. Like, it just kept going down.
Yeah.
The whole... last third of the movie, which is like, bleh, which is exactly what happened in the first Spider-Man, in Raimi's Spider-Man
yep.
for me. The origin was good.
Yep.
Setting up stuff, good, you know. Him getting his powers, good, you know. Like, it's all good. They did it in a different way. It's still the same movie.
Yeah.
And it still got crappy at the end, you know.
So who was the better Peter Parker?
I like this new guy better than...
Andrew Garfield?
Than Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
I like him, too. He's... I don't want to say, like, more relatable, but it just seems like he's more realistic and believable.
Tobey Maguire... I like Tobey Maguire, but... with him as Peter Parker, he just seemed like...
he was trying too hard or something.
He didn't come off as being, like, hyper-intelligent, too smart for his own good.
Mm-hmm.
And awkward because of that.
Right.
This new kid, what's his name?
Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield portrayed that pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
And then when he had some confidence and he was hiding behind a mask or really putting on his true face, you know, that kind of theme comes about, he did start to relish in it. And really did start to come out of his shell and come into his own. The whole scene with the carjacker.
It was brilliant.
Which, in its entirety, was...
crotch!
Yeah, which is great. You know, like, it was just a great scene. And, like, it had already been put out there, mm-hmm. you know,
except in its entirety. Except for the crotch part.
He jumps at the burglar, like, crotch first, and just yells crotch at him, you know, and then, like, puts him in this weird, like, head scissor move. It was awesome.
Yeah.
But it was a disappointment, but, though. But, like, all after the stuff that, he was saying, like, he was, like, being smartass and...
But after that, though, like, that's really where, like, the whole Spider-Man wittiness and the smartass you know, being a smart aleck and whatnot, like, in the comics, it really stopped after that Carjacker scene. I mean, there was some, like, bits and pieces here and there, but I just wanted more.
The good thing about Spider-Man is he'll, not to, like, Deadpool levels, just top people's ear off,
mm-hmm.
but he just gets under people's skin as a coping mechanism. It's like, he really is getting his ass kicked, you know? And he's in a tremendous amount of pain, but he's using, like, just his smart aleckness just to, like, kind of overcome that and kind of tip the tail.
Yeah.
Tip the scales, you know,
yes,
in the fight. So, write that in. You know, I mean, you kind of got it, and you kind of blew it, too, you know. The Lizard talked too much, and the Spider-Man didn't talk enough, you know.
Right,
like,
right.
Figure it out, guys.
Right.
Come on. Like, I'm not saying I could write a better script, because I can't write, but I know, you know, someone behind these guys' shoulders should have been like, no, you got it completely backwards.
Yes.
And then, yes. like, of course, like, Kurt Connors really is a good guy at heart. So when he's not the Lizard, he saves Spider-Man, like, at the last second.
Yeah, that was dumb, because, I mean, he grabbed Spider-Man's hand when he was about to fall off the building.
Yeah.
But at the same time, why didn't Spider-Man just stick to the fucking side of the building?
He can cling to walls.
Yeah.
Was he out of webbing? I forget.
I don't know, but it doesn't matter. He can still cling to walls.
He's got one arm, and he uses one good arm to pull him up. Oh, my God, it was so lame.
Yeah. It would have been better if he just pulled him up with a stub.
What happened with the... right.
Like, he saved him with a stub. All right, that's a little bit better.
Now, here's my dead arm.
I'm slipping off the stub.
I reckon that kind of a little bit from...
Your stub's so sweaty.
To leave in Denver while you're dead.
Your stub's so sweaty, I'm falling off. Why don't you just touch the side of the building, you idiot?
Yeah.
You can stick to things.
Use your sticky hand, dumbass. Oh, okay. So silly. I don't know. It just blew it. Like, they just blew it, you know? It's like watching any Browns game. It looks kind of good, and then, like, the last quarter, they blew it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. There it is. Should have known.
Mm-hmm.
What was the other thing?
Like, I don't know. It was still entertaining, though.
Well, of course it was entertaining. I mean, but that's not the point. Like, what happened with... I don't remember. We watched it so long ago. We went and saw the movie.
Yeah.
Did they kill Captain Stacy?
Yes.
Okay. How did he die? I forget.
Because there was, like, the nitrogen or whatever that was, like, freezing...
Oh, right, he ends up on the building roof on top with a shotgun. The only cop in New York is the captain, and he ends up on the roof helping Spider-Man.
And then that big, huge, like, spire at the top falls on him or something.
Okay, well, that's kind of close to the comics.
I don't know
close
if that
enough, I guess.
I don't actually know if it fell on him and that killed him.
I don't know.
Or maybe Lizard... I don't know.
As long as I set up
the
Green Goblin killing Gwen Stacy, that's fine.
Yeah. Would they actually do that, though?
They would have to. I mean, come on.
I mean, you'd have to introduce Mary Jane.
You don't have to. I mean, you could, but...
As his kind of fallback coping mechanism.
In the soap
opera.
Like
she's... Yeah, the soap opera type of, like, storyline where, like, she's there for him because he just lost the girl that he loved.
But in the soap opera, that is Peter Parker, especially when Stan Lee was writing him and, you know, Ditko and... The old Spider-Man stuff that they're drawing these stories out of, like, I think at the time Mary Jane was dating Harry Osborn,
mm-hmm.
which is another thing.
Where was
Harry Osborn?
You would think Harry would actually have been shown at least once, maybe running Oscorp, if his dad is really sick, because they said that Norman was, like, really sick and on his deathbed or something.
Yeah.
But moving, kind of sidestepping... We talked about this right after we saw the movie. There was the whole scene where Kirk Connors was talking to that other doctor that was kind of, like, in charge. It was the Indian doctor.
Yeah, I don't know if he really was a doctor, but he just came across as being, like, a mobster.
It was creepy.
Because Oscorp's pretty shady, you know, like...
He was definitely shady.
There's a lot of illegal stuff going on at Oscorp, and I think they have, like, just, you know, like, mob dudes. Or, you know, like...
Something.
Like, underground... You know, kind of dudes, you know, whatever, but...
Like, this guy's on the payroll, but he's not on the payroll.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He's, like, some sort of weird...
But they had this conversation where they were talking about, and I'm paraphrasing again...
Which, in corporate America, any middle management guy can come across as being that way.
Right. But I'm kind of paraphrasing this whole conversation that they have, and there's actually, you know, video online that you can watch of the scene. But there's he's talking about, I think, Peter Parker's dad, and asking Kirk Connors if he really told him about this, and it says something about a suit. Like, are you able mm-hmm. to wear the suit? Which we discussed this, where I kind of assumed that maybe because that
the
suit
whole Spider-Man thing in this movie is coming across as being his father created something for Oscorp and then had to go into hiding.
Yeah,
because they were going to take it from him or kill him or something.
Whatever it was something where he had to go on the lam.
Yeah. So, in the Ultimate Spider-Man books, they kind of discover that Parker's dad creates the Venom suit.
Who was working with Eddie Brock's dad.
Right. And not Kurt Connors, but whatever. Right. And he creates, like, this Venom suit, what later comes to be Venom.
Right, know? But it's a suit that's supposed to be, like, a cure for cancer.
Right.
Like, you put the suit on, and it cures your body of cancer.
Yeah, and it's, like, this weird black liquid right. thing that kind of covers your body, and...
I mean, there was that was said, where, you know, there was kind of the whole suit conversation, and, you
yeah.
know, kind of using a loose comparison to the Ultimate Spider-Man.
Right.
You know, with the Venom suit. But there was also a moment where I still firmly believe that Indian doctor said Oz formula.
Right.
Which also in the Ultimate Spider-Man book,
mm-hmm.
the Oz formula is what actually creates Green Goblin, which is
right.
definitely not the Green Goblin from Sam Raimi.
No, Raimi's it's not first. Willem Dafoe's Green
Goblin.
No,
not at all. But it's a monster
yeah.
goblin. And maybe...
It's so funny that Willem Dafoe...
Maybe that's kind of like leading into...
Willem Dafoe insisted on not having a rubber Green Goblin mask because it would come across as being too comic booky, but totally blew that character out of proportion
yeah.
and made yeah. it really, really comic booky when he just would speak a line.
Yeah.
You know, like, he looked kind of cool. He didn't look like, you know...
I just hated the helmet.
Yeah, fine. It's a helmet instead of a rubber mask, whatever. But the way he delivered the lines, just like, oh my
yeah.
god, what is this guy doing? Like,
I mean, that might
for someone so concerned not coming across comic booky,
that might have been just Sam Raimi just telling him do it this way.
Yeah, who knows?
But if he did say Oz formula, which again I'm pretty sure that he did,
yeah,
that could lead me to believe that we're going to see a Green Goblin that's more of a monster.
Yeah, that scene set up. More of an ultimate Green Goblin than a classic.
If that's
goblin.
The case, I mean, that's more of like a, not to use Hulk as a reference again.
But it is.
But
it's a big green monster
guy. It's a big green monster. It's kind of Hulk, kind of Abomination, you know, but he's...
It's kind of Lizard. So,
it's kind of Lizard. I mean, he's
so, I mean,
kind
part
of
the
goblin.
Oz formula could be like taking this reptile-ness
yeah.
from whatever turned Connors into Lizard and working it into a different way.
Right.
And it's another... side effect of the same thing.
I do
know?
Like the fact, though, in this movie that when Peter Parker finds his dad's briefcase,
yeah.
he finds the information or the formula or the research that his dad had to disappear for was right there in there, and he started looking through it. He was the one who actually went to Kirk Connors and fixed the formula,
mm-hmm.
which actually created Lizard.
Right.
So I kind of like the connection where this is all happening, and it's all Peter Parker's fault.
And that just all goes back to the whole, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
He wanted to go and show off.
Yeah.
And now he has to pay the consequences.
Yeah.
Him giving Connors this formula because he wanted to look smart in front of his dad's old colleague ultimately leads to his girlfriend's father's death.
And it's going to lead
you know,
to
so like,
sequels and... They're taking this formula and changing it more, and
yeah.
all these other villains are going to be created
but
from it.
But it just goes completely with why Spider-Man does what he does, because he has to almost pay penance for what he did, you know, in his younger self, you know, his younger life, where he's, like, creating all these monsters, you know, because he's not the same, like, awkward kid, you know? He's got to use his head, you know? So, like,
yeah.
The Uncle Ben lesson's going to keep coming back to him and going like, oh, right, I need to do this. I need to do this, mm-hmm. you know.
Which he was starting what he was starting to get
in. What would be great is if he could have, like, a Captain America or an Iron Man as a role model. But you can't do yeah. that because, like, the studios can't intertwine yeah. the characters and, yeah. you know.
You would think that eventually maybe the studios will work together.
Yeah.
But I don't have high hopes for that.
No.
And no. I was really, really, really hoping when they were showing the New York skyline that they would at least sneak in Stark Tower.
Stark Tower, Baxter Building, anything.
Something. I mean, yeah, it's all different studios, but it just would have been cool.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and conversely, I want to see Spider-Man swinging through the background of an Iron Man movie or an Avengers movie, mm-hmm. you know. Or just being like one of those montages of, like, media, you know? Like,
yeah.
That they showed at the end of the Avengers, like, throw a Spider-Man thing in there. Throw
yeah.
the Fantastic Four in there, you know?
Who is this masked guy?
Right, exactly.
Swinging around.
Yeah. I mean, just to have J. Jonah Jameson's commentary on what the Avengers are up to would be great. But right. You can't do that because you can't have those characters, yeah. you know? It's like, it's one universe that they sold off, you know? A piece at a time, and now they can't play with each other anymore. It's just kind of sad.
Yeah, it's really well, that was sad, but...
Spider-Man... I mean,
we wouldn't have gotten to the point where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Being able to have this conversation and have the website and just all this crazy Marvel news if Marvel didn't actually go that route.
Well, they had to, because, you know, they couldn't just make their own studio.
They didn't have the studio, they didn't have the funding.
They could barely put their own books out, you know, at mm-hmm. one point, you know, in the 90s, so... But, I mean, you know.
Speaking of
and it's Hollywood,
books.
So. Yes.
We're going to quick segue into this final segment
okay.
about Marvel's books, because I know you have some pent-up rage about what is happening in the comic book universe. Before yeah. we end this podcast, you definitely have to share with the listeners
the big Marvel heavy podcast, yeah. All right, let's take a break then.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with... Marvel Now on Superhero Authority Podcast on SuperheroAuthority.com. Welcome back to Superhero Authority's extended podcast.
That's a good after party.
SuperheroAuthority.com. We are into segment number 4, just because it's been so long since we've done a podcast and so much to talk about. And before we went to our short little break, we were teasing the fact that you have some pent-up rage towards the Marvel Now,
yeah.
quote-unquote, reboot of the comics.
They keep doing this. I don't know why they keep doing this. I do know why they keep doing this, because they're trying to get new readers...
Just vent away.
...comfortable with jumping into comic books. Well, there's a breakdown somewhere else besides the fact that comic books are inaccessible to young people for some reason. I don't get that line of thinking.
Okay. Like,
if young people want to buy comic books, they're going to buy comic books. If they want to buy Marvel comic books, they'll buy Marvel comic books. Like, having these really cool movies out with these really cool characters that make a ton of money, and these kids are going to see, they're seeing them. They're spending money.
Yeah.
They're spending their parents' money to yeah. watch these movies. If they wanted to buy the comic books, they probably will. They probably are, you know. But they're just not buying them in single-issue form. Maybe they're getting them digitally, or maybe they're downloading them illegally, or maybe they're just buying them off of Amazon. I don't know. To take the audience that you have left, to take the customers that you have left, and just go, like me, like, you have 400-plus issues of Uncanny X-Men. In an order. In a row. You know?
Yes, you do.
And then you're just going to kind of take that and go like, well, that's over. But now we're just going to reboot Uncanny X-Men from number one again. Okay. That was like one of the longest running titles
right.
that Marvel had. And it always sold well. Now it's at number one. Now I don't even know if I'm going to buy it anymore. You yeah. know what I mean? And I had stopped buying the single issues. I started just buying the trade paperbacks, and mostly I would buy them from Carol and John's. Sometimes I'd buy them from Amazon, you know.
Mm-hmm. The change in continuity is going to
just
change everything.
They just rebooted Uncanny. And I'm just talking about one particular title. They're doing this to everything.
Yeah.
They've already done it with Daredevil numerous amounts of times. They keep doing it with Spider-Man. They keep... The Iron Man, I don't know what volume of Iron Man they're on. I think they're on, like, volume 9. They keep rebooting it every couple of years. And not so much they're rebooting it, but they just put a new creative team on it.
Right.
You know, like, when Warren Ellis started writing it, they started over from number 1. That's where you have the whole Extremis storyline.
Yep, yep.
And then Matt Fraction started writing it, so now it's number 1 again. And then eventually it'll go a couple years, and then they're going to realize someone, editor somewhere, is going to do the math and go like, well, if we never rebooted them from number 1, we'd have an issue number 500 on our hands.
Right.
So we're going to just call, instead of it being like volume 8, number 20, it's going to be... Thank you. It's going to be, you know, 598, and then 599, then 600. Then a year down the road, we need another number 1.
Yeah, right,
number
right.
1 sell for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know why. Who buys a number 1 of a rebooted title? You know what I mean? Just because it's number 1? This isn't like...
There's a lot of people that have that mentality.
This isn't 1991 anymore, guys. Like... Having 5 Jim Lee covers of an X-Men book, number 1, isn't going to make it the most, you know, the biggest selling book of all time anymore. You know what I mean? If you're going to do it with Iron Man, it's not going to, and it's obviously hasn't worked, or else they would have not, they wouldn't keep doing it.
Yeah.
So they already rebooted Uncanny X-Men from number 1. They didn't redo the characters. They didn't relaunch the team.
They didn't retell the origin or anything like that. They just kind of, all right, that continuity ends, and then here's this new continuity.
But it didn't. It just was a new numbering scheme. It's still, you could still read the last issue of Uncanny X-Men, whatever number it was, 400-something, 500-something, and then read the number 1 they put out last year, and it still goes.
Still follows
the same. It's still the same characters. They're still... You know, a bunch of mutants stuck on, you know, Utopia, you know, the island off of whatever, and they're still dealing with the same crap, you know, but it's number 1.
Well, it's just like how, you know, Marvel announced that they're going to be ending 9 books for this whole Marvel Now to make them number 1s.
If they want to end some books, they can end some books, but they're just going to relaunch them at number 1?
For what you're talking about, though, like... You know, there's Captain America 19 is going to be the last one.
They've already rebooted Captain America a million times.
They just did it 19 months ago. Or even Uncanny X-Men number 20 is going to be the last one before...
And that's going to be number 1 again.
Yeah, it's going to be number 1 again.
They're just diluting.
And then in a couple years, it's going to be Uncanny X-Men number 6, blah, blah, blah.
In 1991, they had Uncanny X-Men, which was the one that Stan Lee started in the 60s.
Right.
And then Claremont took over in the 70s, and they didn't change the numbering system.
Yeah.
It was still... They came out twice a month instead of once a month for a while. But then they moved Claremont over to X-Men number 1. And that's the X-Men title that was just X-Men. Started in 91.
With Jim Lee.
With Jim Lee. You know, and then that's where Claremont ended his run. And then both of those, they had 2 X-Men books every month. Then you had X-Factor, X-Force, all that other crap that I own. I own all of.
Yeah.
But then, like, after a while, at some point, they decided to change just X-Men to X-Men Legacy. So that's still going. And then Uncanny's still going. But then they decided to change to end Uncanny and then start Wolverine and the X-Men. And you still have X-Men Legacy. And then you also have Uncanny X-Men.
Number 1.
Number 1. You know.
So really,
all it really does is make it a nightmare for collectors to put what we call runs together.
The single issue collectors.
Where you just want to get all the issues.
Right.
And they made it more confusing by putting in, like, you know, the point ones. When they started doing that a couple years ago with the Age of Heroes or the Heroic Age, you know.
Yeah.
They kind of, like, had, like, an extra book come out a month.
It was like kind of like a side.
It was kind of like a jumping on point, you know. Like, they had Avengers 25 come out, and then they would have Avengers 25.1, And it wasn't the same story. It was the same writer, you know, maybe a different artist. But it was like, okay, well now, from here on, you can start reading Avengers. I've been reading Avengers since, you know, since they ended the continuity the last time. You mm-hmm. know, like, when they, around 500.
So would you be happier if, instead of, like, screwing with the number scheme, they just kept the same, 600, 500, or whatever number, yes. and then just branded it as Marvel Now, that's but fine. Still had the same number scheme? Because eventually, like you said, it'll go back to the normal numbers, where, like, some editor will, like, do the math, right. and then Uncanny X-Men number one that comes out for this Marvel Now...
Yeah.
In 2 years, will be all of a sudden just Uncanny X-Men 700 something.
We need 600 because it's the 600th Uncanny yeah. X-Men book. Well, duh. You know, like, these guys keep doing this. You know, and this happened, like, during Daredevil. Like, Daredevil stopped. They stopped printing Daredevil for a few years because it got really bad. You know, like, it went through the great...
This is after the Bendis.
No, this is way before. This is like, okay. you know, Frank Miller.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, that whole yeah. great run of, you know, Frank Miller on Daredevil. And then it got really bad, you know, because who knows who was writing it, you know. Just comics got really weird in the 90s, you know. They put Daredevil in this weird battle armor, you know. It just got really dumb. And, you know, Maximum Carnage happened and all that stuff happened. And then... No Daredevil. Daredevil's done. They did not make a Daredevil book for years. And then they started making Daredevil again. Okay, then you get a number one.
Right.
That I get. Well, at some point during that volume two of Daredevil, someone did the math, some editor, and was like, oh, well, if you add them together, where Daredevil proper, the first one, ended, and then you take this story arc, or this volume two of Daredevil.
Right.
Heroes Reborn screwed a lot of this crap, too.
Yeah.
That's where Iron Man started getting really wacky. And Avengers. But you take that, and you add this second volume to the first volume that's not, we haven't done, you know, in a long time. Add them together, all of a sudden you got a 500 on your hands. We're looking down the barrel of a 500. Right. So we're going to just start renumbering them. You know, it jumps, you know, from, like, it ends at, like, 450, for the sake of math, picks up at 1 a couple years later.
Yeah.
And then at, like, issue 60-something, 80-something, it's 500.
Right.
Okay, now we're back into normal, you know, okay, I can wrap my head around this. To then just 1 month end it, and the next month start it again, doesn't make any sense.
Right.
If you take a book off of print and off of people making this book, because no one's buying it, and then, you know, bring it back years later, and then people start buying it, fine. And if you want to then renumber it because you have a big, you know, like Hallmark issue on your hands, or a big, you know, monumental kind of thing.
Like a 500.
Or yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or whatever.
A big anniversary issue, fine, yeah. fine. Don't just... rebrand the entire set of books. It's like a cheap marketing ploy, is what it is.
Well, I mean, it's all about making money, but at the same Great. Time, like...
make money.
I mean, I get it. I mean, I totally understand where you're coming from, and really, the moral of the story is Marvel should just stop with this whole changing the numbering thing.
DC did it, and they had a flash in the pan, and they dominated the sales charts. I don't see how that's, you know, still the case.
Right.
And I don't see how just putting a bunch of number ones out there just for the fuck of it is going to change anything.
Especially only a year after DC did that with the New 52.
Right. And it really seemed that the New 52, the DC did, you know, I still don't get what 52 is. I know there's 52 weeks in a year, but...
I think it was 52 titles that they actually rebooted.
Excellent.
But then, like, it just a seemed... month later, they're already canceling, like, right. titles, and then...
So it's the New 30, whatever, it's the no, New 15. No,
it's still the New 52, but they just replace it with these other random titles.
Yeah, awesome.
Just so they can maintain the 52 status.
Yeah, we really need more Demon Guy books, or whatever the hell that character's name is.
We need Shazam.
We do need Shazam, and Black Adam.
Black Adam.
Because Black Adam also yells Shazam. I guess it's the same guy, I don't know.
It just makes me laugh every time I hear the name.
But he looks like Namor, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, the New 52, when they did that, just seemed to me like a cheap ripoff of the Ultimate line.
Yeah.
Of Ultimate Marvel. It was like, we're going to take our characters, modernize them, and start over.
Which was hugely successful for Marvel back in the, 10 years ago.
But it shouldn't have been. Like, no one expected that to take off as well as it did.
Yeah.
And then it got crappy, and, should have ended when it did.
And they're still trying to pull from it, like,
and I guess,
as far as more books.
So Miles Morales, Spider-Man's great. I haven't read an Ultimate book since Ultimatum, because, to me, that's just the end of the Ultimate Universe.
Right.
I'm done with it. Right. Ultimates 3... Ultimatum, done. I'm just over it, Trying to put together Ultimate Vision with, the backwards, upside-down end of the books of the annuals to get that whole storyline together, nightmare. It's cheap marketing that makes me want to stop buying the books.
Because it, branched across, eight different or six different titles or something.
You got to get Ultimate X-Men... Ultimate
Fantastic Ultimates, Four.
Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate this, that, the other thing. And then the back of the issue, instead of being an ad, you flipped it upside down, and it was like a printed upside down part of a story that had to deal with Ultimate Vision.
Yeah, there was like two or three pages or something.
I didn't care. You mean I was like, oh, Ultimate Vision, I want to read this. It's two pages.
It wasn't even a good version of Ultimate Vision.
Yeah, and it sucked. they found him in a basement somewhere because...
And it was a chick!
Galactus sent it there, and they rebuilt it, and what the F ever.
I mean, no disrespect to female characters, but I mean, they took it way too far.
If you want an Ultimate Vision that's a girl, just make it Jocasta. That's some more Ant-Man for you. Some more Ultron. But, what are they actually going to reboot the stories? Or are they just going to kind of go well, all that stuff happened, but we're not going to acknowledge it anymore? I really don't get what this Marvel now is. What happened? Is it now?
And then
we're not going to forget about what happened then?
As soon as I found out that they were actually just doing the whole number scheme from scratch again, I was just like, all right, here it comes again. You know what? I don't care.
People have a hard enough time keeping up with the continuity thing. It's not as bad as DC with the Infinite Earths and the Crisis Eyes and all these other things.
Right.
Marvel continuity is screwed up. I think in large part because all their characters live in the same neighborhood, But it still makes somewhat sense to me, it's still, you can still say, Amazing Spider-Man number 220 still happened.
Right.
And not have to go through a whole, time warp, and say, well, that anything that happened before this event didn't really happen, I don't know what these guys are going to do. I'm still going to follow the writers that I like. I don't think I'm really going to follow a book anymore. I'm not going to just pick up Uncanny X-Men every month because I always pick up Uncanny X-Men.
That's kind of how I am with... I follow certain writers, certain artists anymore just because the continuity is so in flux all the time.
Yeah. And following an artist is okay, but an artist really doesn't do a whole storyline. Sometimes they do. But a lot of times, you follow the story because of the guy writing it,
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll just have different artists doing different things, Every Marvel book that I read has a different artist, every different story arc,
Right. Right.
I don't know.
It's confusing. It's confusing, and you know what? Not to cut you off short, but do you have your little... Jerry Springer words of wisdom about this whole Marvel now before we conclude this extended edition of our podcast?
I don't have anything written out or as much thought put into it as Bob Costas would, but I really don't think that as a comic book fan and a comic book consumer that I'm going to be as willing to really go out of my way to just pick up the normal Marvel books that I would. right. just because of this. I mean,
gotcha. I'm might, sure there's a lot of other listeners that are out there that have the same stuff. Feeling.
I don't know. Like, for me, before even seeing any of it, I don't want to go through this again. You know, like, it's hard enough for me to figure out what trade to buy next because the numbering is so out there. And I don't want to miss an issue. But I usually just buy stuff in trades now. New issue, right. new comics, I just buy in trades. I just wait. Because I can't follow it every month. I can't pick it up. I can't go to the comic shop every week and drop $50. You know, and get all the stories I want. I'll just get them in trade, you know. And then that way I can figure out, well, if it's crappy, it's crappy, you know.
Right.
But I'm not going to go out of my way to, especially with Marvel now, between Marvel now and X-Men versus Avengers and what they're doing there, I don't think I'm going to buy Uncanny X-Men anymore.
Wow.
You know, I'm not going to buy it every month.
And this is coming from a guy who has 400 plus continuity issues of the Claremont era.
Yeah, from 96 up, I have. And I'm just kind of just like, I don't want any part of it anymore, you know.
Well, I'm sure, like I said, even though I was kind of talking at the same time you were, there's probably a lot of listeners out there that feel the same way. They're just kind of sick and tired of it. It's confusing. But on that note, we have to actually conclude our extended podcast due to the fact that battery life on the recording devices are about to run out. And you know what? I mean, this is an unscripted show. I mean, we have our bullet points. We've told our listeners this many times. And I actually specifically told that to Chris Gore when he had me on his pod crash at Comic-Con.
Prod trash.
I mean, it's...
Would you tell me, we just, like, kind of work off the cuff?
We do, though.
I mean, yeah, is that what you told him?
More or less.
Yeah.
More or less. I mean, because this isn't scripted. I mean, we have, like, four bullet points on a piece of paper right now, and we've talked about so much more than those bullet points.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But, anywho... We definitely appreciate all of our listeners out there for tuning in to this extended edition of Episode 11 of Superhero Authority Podcast on SuperheroAuthority.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at SuperheroAuth. And you can follow me at TheDanielWolf. It's spelled W-O-L-F. You can follow Jason.
JPetro714.
And thank you for listening in, and have a good night.
Thanks.